say lost, but a lot of the employees, teachers and others, transferred or were drafted into military service of one sort or another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But actually I was able in various ways to get a teacher for every school that I still had money to run at all.
Yeah.
And one way was the introduction, taking the better Navajo bus drivers and day school assistants, they were called.
Uh-huh.
They did the cooking, the bathing,
right,
things like that, who in many ways were bicultural to a considerable extent,
uh-huh,
and who spoke English and Navajo fairly well,
uh-huh,
and persuaded the civil service to let me use those as teachers in training for a year.
Very tricky.
You see?
Very tricky.
Provided they got in-service training and they went to summer school and things,
yeah,
like that.
Uh-huh.
And then, if successful, at the end of the year, they got a full teacher salary. And many of them just retired a few years ago.
Oh, for
got their, went on really with this stimulus, got college degrees and became fully qualified civil service employees.
My gosh.
But it killed a lot of birds with one stone.
Indeed. Indeed. Was it difficult to get civil service to cooperate?
Yeah. Actually the Indian Bureau was violating civil service regulations on salaries alone. They were underclassified in terms of civil service ratings, so as to pay them less than the Indian Bureau had money to pay them. And so the Indian Bureau resisted the proper classification for many years,
hmm,
of all employees in the field in the Indian service. All the Indian employees, they got $60 a month, as though they were day laborers, for example, when they should have gotten several times that,
sure,
according to civil service standards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this was true about teachers, not civil service standards. And these made recruiting and such problems difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And finally the civil service, but it wasn't until the 50s, demanded that the Indian Bureau,
mm-hmm,
upgrade.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a long time.
Yeah.
Well, so you stayed on there clear through the war?
I stayed on clear through the war because I became involved in post-war planning and behind the scenes publicizing of the needs that finally resulted in the 10-year $88 million program.
Yes.
And so I felt I'd accomplished my goals, a little bit overdue on some relief.
Indeed.
So I left in 49, but the actual passage of the bill was clearly in sight. Wasn't actually passed until 1950, but I left in 49 for a change and requested it when the opportunity came up to start what now was called a big school, the Inter Mountain Indian School up in Utah, the biggest boarding school, co-educational boarding school, and by far in the country ever undertaken. And I didn't want to assume responsibility for how the $88 million was spent.
Let's back up a little bit. Could you tell me about the the beginnings of the formulation of the special Navajo program?
Yeah, this is a story that very few people understand or know. Because I counted 24,000 Navajo children of school age, 6 to 18. And the Bureau denied this and had to be done for 3 or 4 times, but every time I did such things over, the numbers increased. I got more accurate data, and the data I had were always pretty reliable.
When you're saying the Bureau denied, you're referring to Zimmerman?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
George and Kentley.
Okay. All right.
And then later, people came out and said, well, George, you're asking for too many schools because half of them won't come. No obligation, you see, to give them education, and their poverty, their ignorance, their poor health, and so forth, if they won't come, because that's going to ask embarrassing to ask money for those guys, you see. And besides, maybe we can get them to move off the reservation, and then George will be overbuilt. Where was I?
You were going to tell me about the origins of the program.
Oh, yes. Well, and besides, the Bureau of the Budget and the Indian Bureau were in bitter controversy. And you see, I had day schools unfilled because we didn't have buses, or the buses couldn't go far enough, even though I had buses, because mm-hmm. there weren't any roads for buses.
Okay.
So the school only has 15 kids, and this is not the Indians' fault.
But they assumed it was.
But they assumed it was. That's right. Said they won't come anyway. George, look, you only got 15, you know? So, I was, therefore, during the war, in order to keep that school going at all, I didn't even have a bus. I conceived the idea of having run a native dormitory where they could come and stay native style. It's either that or nothing, which is worse, bad as it may be. If the people will build a hogan for the kids and send somebody in to sleep with them nights, and maybe even bring in some corn and mutton once in a while, because they got no money to feed them or house them or anything, you see?
Yeah.
Well, the government was so opposed to the boarding idea that I wasn't permitted to put them anywhere near the school where there are toilets and running water and heat. They had to be outside the fence or several miles away. But we did it for all but 15, 16 schools.
Who were you fighting in the Bureau?
Well, go back. No, having this, nobody was going to put up money for this. You couldn't even get authority with a war on for materials, even to put up a hogan. You had to provide it yourself. You get the Indians to go out and quarry some rock or bring in some logs. But I was able to say all along, you see, that we still are short schools for 16,000 kids. And the Bureau of the Budget says, we're not going to give you any schools, George, for any kids, so you fill up what you got. Well, this is an impossible situation. You couldn't fill up what you got.
Right. I understand that.
So the Bureau of the Budget took the position that until you fill the off-reservation boarding schools, contrary to the Bureau's policy, you're not going to get any schools. And they said this year, not just once, but year after year. And the situation was getting worse on the Navajo.
Yeah.
So we decided to fill up those schools.
So you have to tell the Navajo people that they had to send their kids away in order to get schools built on the reservation.
That's right.
How did they react?
Well, the Bureau of the Budget said, fill up Albuquerque first, George, and they wouldn't go.
Is this during the war you're still talking about?
No.
This is just after?
This is after.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The war couldn't be an excuse any longer.
Okay.
The war was over, what, 46?
45.
I forget, 45.
45, okay.
Yeah, the war was over.
Mm-hmm.
And
so first they wouldn't go.
They wouldn't even go to Albuquerque. That was the nearest. You see? And Mr. Beatty and I were on their side. And besides, Albuquerque was a high school, and we didn't have many high school kids. How can you have high school kids if you don't have first graders? So we tried to get Albuquerque to take some younger kids somehow, but they still wouldn't go. They wouldn't send younger kids away, and there weren't any older kids that Albuquerque could accept.
It's an incredible dilemma.
Impasse after impasse, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Willard Beatty and I, and then about this time Willard Beatty says they're about to close Sherman, George, out at Riverside, California. Because California is going to assume responsibility for an education, and we won't have any need for it anymore. And I said, well, I don't think any school anywhere ought to be closed while the need is as great as it is, even though it is way over there. And so then we began to say, well, now we won't send younger ones, and we're against sending younger ones ourselves.
Sure, sure. Right.
But the older ones are not in too much of a different position from white rural kids have been for years. They have to board in town for the winter in order to go to high school, for example. Well, these kids aren't ready for high school. Well, then so we had a lot of questions. Can we develop a program in spite of that will serve the kids from ages 13 to 18 who've never been in school, speak no English, no white man's customs, and teach him a trade because there's no place out now for him in his time. This is how the special program, but it was really the stimulus for us to do some innovative thinking in order to beat the general, the Bureau of the Budget in its own game.
Okay,
of
was
opposition.
This all of this reasoning and thinking out, was this primarily between you and Dr. Beatty?
And Hildegard Thompson.
And Hildegard Thompson.
She was brought in as a supervisor. We decided to do it as an experiment for 200 kids at Sherman.
Okay.
And we had a lot of basic questions. Will they come?
And
so forth. And will they stay? And will they come back? And how long do you need, George? Well, we just took a guess. We said we need 5 years. We don't think they'll stay any longer. They'll get married regardless.
Right.
If you don't take them till he's 16, 17, he's going to get married in 5 years. And anything less than that, we know we can't do. Well, this later proved to be a pretty shrewd guess all over the world about non-literate primitive people.
What she came into the program from what position?
Well, she had been my supervisor on a Navajo, so she was well acquainted with Navajo problems.
So her title was what?
Well, under me, she was supervisor of academic instruction.
But
then Willard Beatty had taken her to work on a broader basis on his staff in Washington on reading. And so he was willing to reassign her back, but under his direction, not under mine. This Willard Beatty asked me this question, George, do you want to supervise? And I said, no, that's not the question. The question is, what is the best arrangement? Because I'm not going to be here very long.
There we go. Okay. Now, okay, so she became the supervisor of the program?
Yeah, directly under Willard Beatty.
All right.
I was a consultant.
Ah. Okay.
And often made trips with her to see how it was going, evaluate, and discuss what are the next steps, what are the problems that we saw.
What was Madison Coombs' capacity at this time?
Well, he wasn't involved with the special program.
He just wrote about it later, but he wasn't there at the time.
And he was unfamiliar with it. His writing, you see, my insight was really not because of familiarity with it, and he did the best he could.
He was a half at that time, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's where he was.
Oh, he was.
Yeah,
oh.
That's right.
Well,
yeah, in guidance at Haskell.
What did you think of the job he did on it?
Well, I didn't think he did the job real justice. I couldn't write it myself because you'd have to be there. The only one who could have done it real justice would have been Mrs. Thompson, and she wasn't doing it.
No, that's too bad.
Yeah. I've given some reference because of that. I've tried to summarize the particularly unique principles that went into the program in a book that I just finished, but it's only a few pages I've devoted to it.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, didn't the program, at least I have developed this in the chapter that I wrote.
The program grew very fast.
Didn't it become almost an example for other boarding schools?
We hoped it would be, but